I'm Marty Moscoe-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. President Trump visited Pennsylvania's 18th congressional district two times to stump for Republican Rick Saccone, saying on Saturday that this was a very big race. Mike Pence was also there, as was Donald Trump Jr. and Ivanka Trump. But all that star power in a district where Trump beat Hillary Clinton by 20 percentage points in 2016 was not enough. Democrat Connor Lamb was able to eke out a little more than 600 more votes than Saccone in Tuesday's special election declared victory, although Saccone has not conceded. The National Republican Congressional Committee is waiting for provisional ballots to be counted and has not ruled out a recount. Republicans and Democrats both saw a silver lining, something positive in the results. Here's House Speaker Paul Ryan on Wednesday.
Look, I think the president helped close this race. I think you saw the public polling. The public polling wasn't looking so good, and the president came in and helped close this race and got it to where it is right now, which is, you know, within a few hundred votes. I think the point that first of all, we need to execute. We need to get our message. We need to make sure that our candidates aren't massively outraised and outspent on TV, as was the case between these two candidates. But second point I'd say is both of these people, both of these candidates, the Republican and the Democrat, ran as conservatives. Ran as pro-gun, pro-life, anti-Nancy Pelosi conservatives. And I think that's the takeaway we see here.
Tom Perez, chair of the Democratic National Committee, had a very different take speaking on Fox.
Here's the reality. The number one issue was health care in the district. Democrats believe that health care is a right for all, not a privilege for a few. And we've seen the repeated efforts to make it harder for people struggling with opioid addiction to get access to health care. The health care voter came out in force, and they were supporting Connor Lamb. Similarly, there's a lot of folks there who are mine workers who are losing their pensions. They've been fighting for them, and the Republican Party hasn't been doing a darn thing for them. And so Democrats and Connor Lamb, he was fighting for the right to organize, fighting to make sure that people had a good wage and pension security. He was fighting, in short, for issues that are core to the Democratic Party, and that's why he won.
We are talking about the lessons of the 18th Congressional District, the lessons for the Republican Party. Charlie Giroux joining us by telephone. He is CEO of the public relations and issue advocacy firm called Quantum Communications. I should add that Harrisburg magazine dubbed him Harrisburg's most politically well-connected conservative. Charlie Giroux, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Always good to be with you, Marty. It's a pleasure.
A pleasure as well. And John Brabender joining us as well. He's a Republican consultant with Brabender Cox. He worked on the Saccone campaign. He's also working on Paul Mango's campaign, running for governor, and Lou Barletta, who's running for the U.S. Senate. John Brabender, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Glad to be here.
And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me toss this to both of you, because President Trump, talking about Connor Lamb, says he sounds like a Republican to me. Is there a danger Republicans are taking the wrong lesson from this campaign in that Connor Lamb supported Obamacare, although said it needed some fixes? He called the GOP tax bill a giveaway to the wealthy. Yes, he's not for new gun restrictions, but for a stronger system of background checks. He did support the president on tariffs. He's personally opposed to abortion, but he's politically in support of Roe v. Wade. He wants to protect labor rights, pensions, the rights of unions to organize. Charlie, he doesn't sound like a Republican or a conservative to me. Is there a danger of learning the wrong lesson?
Well, he doesn't sound like a conservative, Marty, but he doesn't also sound like an anti-Trump progressive slash resistance candidate, which is what the Democrats ran in the previous five special elections, each of which they told us they would win and each of which they lost. So I think there are, you know, some lessons to be learned from Tuesday. I think the national media tries to hype the lessons way, way, way more than they should. And frankly, the bragging rights in this particular situation are pretty short-lived, because the district that was won on Tuesday doesn't exist in the primary election in May.
Well, let me go to you, John Brabender, and it needs to be said, I'll repeat it, it's been said multiple times, of course, that President Trump was able to beat Hillary Clinton by 20 percentage points. That was about a year and a half ago. What happened in those intervening months?
Well, first of all, I think people are framing the question entirely wrong. I think the bigger question is, this is a district with over 70,000 more Democrats than Republicans. And so one of the questions I think people should be asking is, why the heck has it taken so long for Democrats to be even competitive in a highly Democrat district? And part of that is the composition of these Democrats. They're the sons and daughters of what we used to call Reagan Democrats. They're conservative on issues like guns and abortion, but they're also very pro-union. And so I would argue that if Rick Saccone ran against Nancy Pelosi or ran against Hillary Clinton for Congress in this district, Rick Saccone probably would have won by about 10 points.
But he did. He was running against Connor Lamb, who distanced himself from Nancy Pelosi.
Right. And that's my whole point. Connor Lamb ran about as close as you can to in this district as a pro-Trump Democrat. And so if you look at the composition, there's two things dynamic that are going on at the same time. And it was a smart strategy. Number one, Democrats on the left-leaning side of the party are extremely unified because they don't like Donald Trump, just like Republicans on the right side didn't like the Clintons and they didn't like Barack Obama. And sometimes your opposition can sort of unify you better than your own party. So you start with that. Then you have a bunch of Democrats in this district who a lot of times vote Republican. And believe me, I did every congressional race in this district since 2000. So I know the district extremely well. There are Democrats who just as soon vote for a Democrat, but they always keep getting Democrats that they can't support. They're from the left side of the party. Connor Lamb ran very much as a centrist who was very careful not to criticize President Trump. And therefore, you had a lot of Democrats saying, this is a Democrat I can support, pro-union, conservative on the social issues. And so I think, you know, the lesson is, you know, why are the Democrats so thrilled to win in a race where there's 70,000 more Democrats than Republicans? I think that tells you a lot about Pennsylvania and why Donald Trump won Pennsylvania.
Well, let me go back to you, Charlie Turow. And I mean, I think it's going out on a limb to say that he was a pro-Trump Democrat. There was nothing in Connor Lamb's race that would be, he said he would work with the president where they agreed on issues. But it's it seems to me, again, that's the wrong lesson to say he was pro-Trump.
Well, on issues, he certainly aligned himself much more with Donald Trump than with Nancy Pelosi and the National Democrats, Marty. You can't escape that. To say he was pro-Trump, I mean, we're parsing words at this point. I don't think he was so much pro-Trump as he was anti-Nancy Pelosi and the National Democrats. And for Tom Perez to say that health care was the driving issue in that race is really to, you know, have Washington speak at its highest and best effort. I mean, it's just that was not the driving issue in that race. And bluntly, this became much more of a personality contest down the road than it started out to be. This should have been a Republican victory. I would correct John on one thing. The margin there is not 70,000 votes, Democrat versus Republican. It's only when you throw in independents and other parties that you get to that 70,000 number. But it's still a Democrat district by registration. It's been voting Republican for the past, you know, couple of decades or more. But, pardon me, the labor Democrats went home in this election. And I think there may be the lesson, but it's for that particular district. And as I say, the bragging rights are very short-lived here.
But what do you think, Charlie, was the driving issue? There's some polling there to say that health care actually was one of the important issues in that race.
Well, look, organized labor was very effective in getting out the vote. And these special elections turn on voter turnout. President Trump came in on Saturday night and I think helped Rick Saccone with his turnout effort. The last poll that you saw was the Monmouth poll that showed Connor Lamb up 6 points. He ended up, you know, apparently winning by less than a point. So clearly the president's effort at turnout on Saturday night helped. But organized labor was very effective in bringing back their core. Tim Murphy, the previous member of Congress there, had been very effective in keeping labor in the Republican column. In fact, the Democrats didn't even run anybody in the previous two congressional elections.
True.
But this time, because of some votes that Rick Saccone had made here in Harrisburg, which I think he would say would do again, organized labor was very, very strongly in opposition to him. And the labor leadership was able to get the rank and file to follow them, something they haven't always been able to do.
But does that tell you that?
Right.
Go ahead, John.
A very important point on understanding why the previous congressman did so well. He had a remarkable relationship with labor. In fact, he voted for card check, which is probably the most important vote to two labor organizations these days. The one thing labor really likes better than a pro-labor Democrat is a pro-labor Republican, because they feel they don't have enough of them. So you were never going to have Tim Murphy get a solid opponent, because he had labor and he had the conservative Republican side of the party, and therefore would do well. Donald Trump was also supported heavily by labor in most of Pennsylvania. And so, Rick Saccone did not have that. And at the same time, quite frankly, Rick Saccone had the problem of being outraised financially 5-1 by Connor Lamb. Now, there were outside groups that played. In fact, I would say the outside groups probably played more than the candidates did. Rick Saccone spent, for every $5 Lamb spent, Rick Saccone was able to spend only $1.
Well, let me just pick up on that. Hold on one little second, okay. Because that was also something that Paul Ryan said. I mean, John Brabender, when you look at all the money that was spent or invested in this district, Saccone had more money, most of it from outside groups.
Well, look, but I'm saying Connor Lamb's campaign and the message he could get out and control, he was able to do it a much better way than Rick Saccone. Second of all, the outside groups ran almost exclusively definition candidate campaign ads against Connor Lamb, most of them tying them to Nancy Pelosi, which right. did not work, since Connor Lamb ran ads saying that I would never support Nancy Pelosi. Rick Saccone, who actually has a pretty good narrative, was never able to effectively, in that whole mess of ads, effectively get his voice heard, because his share of voice, the dollars he was spending relative to the total universe being spent on campaign ads, was really just minimal. And so one of the things I would say is that Connor Lamb, because he moved so far to the center and even partly to the right, I would argue that the negative ads that the outside groups tried to run against them, that they would typically run and use, you show a picture of him with Nancy Pelosi and all of a sudden his unfavorables go up. He did a very effective job saying that he does not support Nancy Pelosi, while at the same time he said he found that the president's tariff idea was very intriguing.
Hold on, Charlie, we're almost up on a break here, but go ahead. I know you want to say something.
Yeah, I want to echo what John said, and I want to give a little bit of context to it, because the point he makes here is very important. You know, Connor Lamb was able to outspend Rick Saccone by a very significant margin, and that meant that Rick Saccone couldn't control his own message. And he had a good story to tell, but he never got to tell it until the wee hours of the morning, late in the campaign. These outside groups, which, there's always kind of a visceral reaction inside any district to outside groups coming in and spending an inordinate amount of money. Folks say, oh, no, you shouldn't be telling us what to do or how to vote or how to think. And bluntly, the Nancy Had a Little Lamb ads were goofy. I don't think they worked, and in fact, I think they may have backfired. But Rick Saccone, unfortunately, was never able to shift from running for state legislature to running for Congress. Different races. He should have been dialing for dollars.
I got to jump in here, Charlie. Hold on. We're going to take a very short break, and we'll be right back. Stay with us. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowain, talking with Charlie Giroux. He's CEO of the public relations and issue advocacy firm Quantum Communications, located in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. John Brabender with us as well. He's a Republican consultant with Brabender Cox on the other side of the state here from Philadelphia. He did work on the Rick Saccone campaign. He's also working on the campaign of Paul Mango, who's running for governor, and also Lou Barletta, who's running for the Senate. And we are talking about the 18th Congressional District Special Election on Tuesday. Connor Lamb holding on to a lead of just about 600 votes or so. Republican Rick Saccone has not conceded, and there's some question about whether there will be a recount or not. And we should add that it looks like this district will actually disappear by the end of the year because of redistricting in Pennsylvania, so a lot in play. You can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me read a tweet from Ian. He says, modern GOP is so opposed to worker organizing, it's jarring to hear the guests framing Lamb support for unions as somehow a conservative or even a centrist position. Support for labor is about as left as you can go. You agree with that, John Brabender?
Well, I don't think support for labor is left or right. I think it's a mistake if we think of it that way. I think that Republicans in general should have a much better relationship with labor than we do. I think that this president is helping that happen. I think the whole idea, when he talks about America first, what he's talking about is really America workers first, in trade agreements, in how much money you take home, and how we're going to compete on innovation, on fairness, on all those things. In fact, I would argue that immigration by this president is seen the same way, is that he wants to make sure we're doing it in a way that is fair from the context of people who are already here living and working legally than those people coming into the country. So I think in the past we have wanted to just assign labor to the Democrat Party. I think that's been a mistake by our party. And I think that actually President Trump is working hard to change that relationship.
Charlie, I'm curious about the suburban voters in this particular district. I guess it was just the suburbs of Pittsburgh. Is this a voting block that's in particular play in Pennsylvania?
Well, I think John can speak to that better than I can because he lives there. But, you know, Mount Lebanon is where Connor Lamb was from. It's the, you know, largest municipality in suburban Allegheny County. And, you know, listeners in the Philadelphia area should understand that Pittsburgh wasn't in this district. It was
right.
The lower portion of Allegheny County that was. And that's where the Democratic vote came from. In Greene County, in Westmoreland County, and in Washington County, Connor Lamb carried those, Rick Saccone carried those areas, but not by the margins that he needed to overcome Lamb's lead in the Allegheny County portion. But as you've already correctly pointed out, the new 14th district doesn't take into account that area. Neither Connor Lamb or Rick Saccone live in the district that was created by the state Supreme Court a few weeks ago. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see how all this shakes out. Connor Lamb is now faced with the prospect of running against Keith Rothfuss, who is a pretty popular member of Congress there already. So we'll see. I think it's an uphill battle for him going forward.
Yeah, very interesting. John, let me turn to you. And I know that tax cuts was considered to be a winning issue. And my understanding is that into this race, there were a lot of ads touting the tax cuts, but then they were yanked. And I wonder whether that is not a winning issue when it comes to Republican races.
Well, yeah, yes and no. Yes, it hasn't become the winning issue that it should be. And no, I don't think it's off the table yet. I saw a lot of polling in this race, and I was actually pretty surprised, and I would say disappointed to see that when asked about the tax cuts, it was sort of a 50-50 issue, with half the people saying they thought it was a good idea and half the people saying it's a bad idea. Yet, when you look at the tax cuts, 90% of tax-paying Americans are seeing their take-home pay go up. And so I find that as a huge disconnect, because I find it hard to believe that people are seeing more money going into their bank account, yet they don't like that idea. And the problem is, I think that as a party, we have a tendency to sometimes be very poor at getting ahead of a message, defining what it's about, and making sure people understand why we're doing it. We sometimes just go and do it. And so I think for this to be an effective issue for the Republicans in the 2018 fall elections, we do have to go back and explain to people that there were huge financial benefits. It wasn't just money going to corporations. We saw bonuses from company after company. We saw the incredible amount of money that Apple Computer is now bringing in, reinvesting into America based upon the tax cuts and so forth. Yet I'm not sure that message was effectively communicated. And I think it's when you say there's a wake-up call from an election from like this one, those were some of the wake-up calls. What could we have done better? And certainly articulated the advantages and the personal economy advantage of everybody's home is their own economy, why this was a good idea and we have to do better at it.
Well, I mean, Charlie, people know in their own paychecks whether they're getting a tax increase, excuse me, a tax cut, or whether they've got a bigger paycheck than they had 6 months ago. So it seems this would be a very good test for any candidate or any party about whether this was a good tax plan or not.
Yeah, and I think John is exactly correct on that. It's going to take a little bit of time for people to recognize and realize the benefits that are coming their way. The jingle in their pocket helps, and I think that's moved the needle. I hate that expression, but it certainly has helped in the polling because, as you know, Marty, the polling on this early on was dominated by the Democratic message that this was somehow a big boost to corporations and not to the middle class, whereas in point of fact, virtually every working Pennsylvanian is getting a boost. But there's an additional aspect to it, and that's a simple word, and that's J-O-B-S, jobs. And that's where the issue of organized labor comes into play, because organized labor understands jobs better than anybody, but so do conservative Republicans. I think there's the fusion issue for Republicans in 2018, and in Pennsylvania, it centers around the energy economy, which is so vitally important to the 18th Congressional District, which we just had the special election in, but to the rest of the Commonwealth as well. Because one of the issues driving throughout southwest Pennsylvania is the creation of jobs through natural gas in particular and the energy sector more broadly.
Let me ask you, though, about the president's appearance on Saturday. Charlie, I'll start with you. And you and others seem to say that he helped Saccone at least come almost 50-50 with Connor Lamb. But he barely mentioned Rick Saccone at that event in Moon, Pennsylvania. Do you think that was a mistake? And what does that tell us about the president?
No, I mean, that's the president's style. That's what he does at these rallies. There were folks coming in from all over the place to that rally. But, the media coverage of it was about voter turnout, and that worked. I mean, the very precise purpose of that visit was successful. I don't think you can argue that. I mean, the polling, the Monmouth poll, which is supposed to be the gold standard, indicated that it was, a growing lead for Connor Lamb. In fact, they were saying it was 6 points. It didn't turn out to be anywhere near that. So I think you have to say and conclude that the president's visit helped.
What do you think, John?
Well, absolutely. And first of all, you got to understand one thing. On Tuesday, Rick Saccone got votes to Connor Lamb. If you take out the early voting absentee ballot, actually, Rick Saccone got more votes last Tuesday than did Connor Lamb. And I think a lot of that was because of the president's visit. The important point, the president was talking to conservative Democrats in that district, and he understood that they're Democrats who would like to vote for a Democrat. But his whole point was to get them to go vote and support the Trump agenda, which most of them do, and was trying to make the point, you got to disregard what Connor Lamb's telling you. When he gets there and he's with Nancy Pelosi, trust me, he's going to vote against my agenda and with Nancy Pelosi. And I think that at the end of the day, I think that probably did move a few votes. And I think the president should feel like he did everything that he could.
But in 2016, John, I mean, he won that by 20 percentage points over Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, which tells you a lot about Hillary Clinton, quite frankly. Hillary Clinton would be about as far outside the mainstream of this district as you possibly could have. And so that's the thing to keep in mind. Everybody wants to make this a reference or a benchmark against how did Tim Murphy do when he was congressman, or how did Donald Trump do in this district. I think the point you have to understand is they had completely different opponents with completely different backgrounds. And I would imagine that Rick Saccone would probably beat Hillary Clinton by double digits in this district if she was running for Congress.
And of course, Romney beat Obama. And I mean, it's been a strong Republican part of Pennsylvania. Very quickly, if you don't mind, Charlie, and then I'll get Melanie from Kennett Square to join us.
Yeah, I was just going to say the thing that strikes me about this election, Marty, is that liberal Democrats ought to have a lot more to fear. I mean, if they're thinking that this was the prototype of campaigns to come, they're going to have candidates who are happy being pictured firing AR-15s and happy with candidates who say, I'm dissing Nancy Pelosi and won't vote for her and don't believe in her agenda. That isn't exactly the progressive resistance model that we heard was going to work.
It's more like Joe Manchin, wouldn't you say, Charlie?
It is Joe Manchin. Yeah, I said that several times, Marty. It's Joe Manchin prettied up. I mean, Connor Lamb was, matinee idol good looks with Joe Manchin's policy positions.
Well, you know what? Let me get another Charlie to, we don't have, We have him. Okay, sorry, I've got two screens going here, and we have a third guest waiting in the wings to join our conversation. Melanie Holdon from Kennett Square. Let me get Congressman Charlie Dent to join us. He represents Pennsylvania's 15th Congressional District. He's been doing that since 2005. He's a Republican, and he's retiring this fall after serving in Congress for more than a decade. Charlie Dent, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Hey, great to be with you and John and Charlie.
And John and Charlie, exactly. I'm going to call you Congressman Dent so that people don't confuse you with Charlie Giroux, okay. Just because we've got three male voices on the radio today. We've been talking about this 18th Congressional District and trying to figure out what are the lessons for the Republican Party. What's your takeaway?
Yeah, my takeaway is this. I thought the race actually was a little bit less about the candidates and more about the national political environment. I felt that way for some time. What we've seen in the last over this past year, we've had about four or five special elections in the U.S. House, in Montana for the Zinke seat, in Kansas for the Pompeo seat, South Carolina for the Mulvaney seat, and Georgia for the Price seat. And what we saw, and of course the Murphy seat in Pennsylvania, what we've seen is that in each of those races, the Republican candidate, you know, significantly underperformed the president in the last election. Now, why is that? And I think that this midterm election is going to be a referendum on the party in power, the president of the United States, and his conduct in office. That's going to be the primary theme, just as it was in 2010 when, you know, the issue was the Democrats and Barack Obama and their agenda. So I think we have to be, you know, eyes wide open that the candidates certainly are a factor in this. I'm not going to diminish that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it is secondary to this overall toxic political environment.
Well, I mean, what you seem to be saying is that midterm elections are in many ways a referendum on whoever's in the White House. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes. It's the party in power and specifically the president. Yeah.
So is the president, President Trump, is he hurting the Republican Party from your perspective?
Well, it's interesting. I think John Boehner just made an interesting comment. I was listening about, you know, that, you know, we were looking at this 18th district as a plus 20 Trump district.
Right.
I kind of look at it in some respects as a minus 20 Hillary district. That, in other words, there are a number of people that Donald Trump, while he did very well out there, part of that reason is because many people were simply voting against Hillary Clinton. So what I saw in the race was that, you know, I'd say if Saccone made one error, I don't think you should in any race ever just say you're going to be the wingman for the president and just completely embrace, because then that defines you. And I think each candidate, no matter how moderate or conservative your district is, you have to show some degree of independence. People want to they want to elect you as a member who's going to be thoughtful and be able to, you know, check the executive from time to time, even if it's an executive they may like. And so I thought that was a mistake on the campaign side. But bottom line is we're going to have a tough political environment. We all know that. And I tell my colleagues who are not only in the marginal districts, the swing districts, they know they're in for fights. They're better prepared for fights. They have to deal with it all the time. And even good candidates with good campaigns can lose races in a bad environment like this. But these members who are in, you know, reasonably safe districts like this one in southwestern Pennsylvania, the 18th, I tell them, boy, these guys have never been in a real fight before. And they may be in one, and they're going to have to readjust their thinking, run real campaigns, and develop their own identity separate and distinct from the president.
Well, let me pick up on that and toss that to you, John Brabender, since you did work with Saccone on the Saccone campaign. He did say that he was Trump before Trump was Trump. Was that a mistake?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I can tell you that one of the ads that we ran that actually I saw somebody within the party criticize was him talking about working on both sides of the aisle to get a child predator bill passed. And there was I saw somebody complaining that Saccone didn't go far enough in embracing the president. And so what truly does happen if you don't win a race, people immediately are saying, oh, well, you know, should have done this or that. I think that you got to understand Rick Saccone a little bit. Rick Saccone is not the type of guy who's going to have a bunch of consultants either in Pennsylvania or Washington saying, here's what you have to say to get elected. Well, Rick Saccone is somebody who truly believes in what he does and what he says, and he's going to stick with that whether it's going to win or lose an election for him. So Rick certainly was a strong supporter of the president, was not afraid to stand up and say that. And so you could argue whether it was the politically right thing to do I would argue that it probably was, but you could make a good argument either way on that. But Rick Saccone decided he wasn't going to have people tell him what he had to say to get elected. He had a strong a record out of Harrisburg as people having a real clear indication of what his ideology was, what his beliefs were, and he decided he was going to run on those for better or worse, and that's what he did.
Charlie George, do you agree with Congressman Dent, though, who's saying, looking ahead to the races coming up this year, that Republicans have some headwinds they're going to have to deal with?
Of course. I mean, the midterm elections have always been brutal, not just unkind, but brutal to the party that occupies the White House. That isn't unique to Donald Trump. That's been the case over the course of many, many years in our country's history. But there's another point here that I think needs to be made, and that is that one of the weaknesses of the Saccone campaign was that they were never able to truly coalesce the Republican base. The conferee process that yielded him as the nominee left a lot of broken ambitions and bruised egos and hurt feelings. And they needed to quickly heal those wounds, and they really weren't able to do that very well. And as a result, there was a spoiler in the race who garnered enough votes to be the balance of power, regardless of the ultimate outcome, who got, you know, more than 1,000 votes. And some Republicans, frankly, didn't do all that they could to help Rick Saccone. So I think it's going to be important for Republicans to unite this fall and to rally around the principles of the Republican Party in particular, but economic growth and jobs more specifically.
And we're almost having a break here. Charlie Giroux, who was that guy? Because I was watching the returns and I saw the name on the bottom of the list and he got about 1,000 votes or so. Who was that?
Yeah, and he was a former Republican staffer here in Harrisburg who ran as a libertarian and, you know, got some votes from, you know, places that frankly would have gone to Rick Saccone otherwise.
That's Charlie Giroux, CEO of the Public Relations and Issue Advocacy Firm Quantum Communications, based in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Congressman Charlie Dent with us as well. He represents Pennsylvania's 15th Congressional District. He's been doing that since 2005. He is retiring at the end of the year. John Brabender, a Republican consultant with Brabender Cox out there in the western part of Pennsylvania. We're talking about Pennsylvania politics, the 18th Congressional District, and where the Republican Party goes from here. 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. Let me just recap here with more elections on the horizon. We're talking about some of the lessons for Republicans from the 18th Congressional District here in Pennsylvania. Was it a referendum on President Trump? Was Rick Saccone the wrong candidate? Is Connor Lamb's playbook reproducible? A few weeks ago, we talked about the challenges facing the Democratic Party, and today it's the Republicans' turn. Melanie has been waiting very patiently from Kennett Square. Melanie, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thank you. First of all, I just wanted to say that I've heard Congressman Dent speak several times on different programs, and he's a refreshing voice in the Republican Party, and I really appreciate that. And really what I wanted to say was sort of supporting his point of view, and that, you know, trying to draw conclusions from this election based on issues and unions and that kind of thing is ignoring the elephant in the room, and that's President Trump. And it sounds like the other two Republicans that you have on there are trying to normalize this president when clearly he's anything but normal, and that the results of all the previous special elections and the elections in Virginia have pointed to the same thing, and that is that the people realize he's not normal. And that those huge margins that we saw in 2016 are not going to hold up in the midterms. And the brand of the Republican Party is very much being damaged by President Trump.
Melanie, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Congressman Dent, can you respond?
Yeah, I guess the only point I would make is this. Look, this election, I consider 2018 analogous to 2010 to the in the 1994. You know, yes, it's about President Trump and the Republican Party in 2018, just as it was about Barack Obama in 2010, just as it was about George W. Bush in 2006 in the Iraq War, and just as it was in 1994 about Bill Clinton and his agenda. So, yeah, yes, it's, I do believe it's pretty in power, and it's that simple. And we shouldn't delude ourselves. I mean, there's some of my colleagues who are just trying to some of my colleagues in Washington and other pundits are trying to simply say there were specific singular factors in this district, Pennsylvania 18, that explains the loss. And I said, no, I really don't think so. You just have to look at those other special elections and frankly, these legislative races around the country where we have just, as Republicans, have been underperforming significantly. The intensity and the energy is clearly on the other side. Now, we were the beneficiary of this in 2014 and 2010 recently, but, you know, we're on the opposite end of it this time, and you just have to be, as candidates, developing your own brand and be ready to fight. You're going to have to work your tails off and do everything much better than you ordinarily would have done.
Congressman, we're going to call you back. Not the greatest phone line, and I want to make sure our listeners can hear your every word. So if you don't mind hanging up, we'll call you back, and hopefully it'll be a better phone line. Charlie Giroux, let me toss Melanie's question or her observation or her comment to you, and I'm looking at some of the more recent polling on the president. This is as of early March. Approve, you know, in the 40s, disapprove into the 50s. How much do you think this president is bringing down the party and the brand of the Republican Party?
Well, I think with the 18th congressional district, which is what we're focused on this morning, Marty, just take Connor Lamb's word for it. Don't take mine or John Brabender's. He said that Donald Trump was not the main issue in the campaign. So, you know, I'll take him at that. You know, look, the party in power, meaning the party that controls the White House, always has difficulty in the midterm elections. And it's up to the individual candidates, in my judgment, in 2018, to more localize the campaigns rather than trying to nationalize them. And John will tell you that ordinarily that's the opposite you try to do. You try to nationalize the campaigns. But I think in 2018, Republicans are going to do very well by kind of following what Connor Lamb did, tying themselves very closely to the issues and the people within a particular congressional district and running head-to-head with them. And I think that's the formula for success.
But is it also sending a message to the president, which is, we don't want you here?
No. I mean, you know, you'd like that to be the message.
No. Believe me, I remember when Democrats were saying to President Obama, we don't want you here. We don't want you campaigning with us.
No, I mean, look, in the 18th district, the one that we're talking about today, Rick Saccone clearly embraced Donald Trump. It was Connor Lamb that refused to embrace Nancy Pelosi. I think there's the storyline.
What do you make of the president and what Republicans can do in relation to him, John Brabender?
Well, look, I think this is a more complex question than I, for total honesty, the day Donald Trump announced, I was on a broadcast and I said, I don't know why we're even talking about Donald Trump. There's no way he's going to be the nominee. And then he went and beat 16 credible senators and governors on the Republican side. And it took me and others to understand that we were looking the wrong place. We were looking at Donald Trump, and we weren't looking at Donald Trump supporters, people that he was bringing to the table that weren't there already for the Republican Party. And it was a group of people who felt disenfranchised from everyone. They felt the Republican Party didn't understand or care for them. The Democrats had moved away from them, and they were left on the economic playing field. And that's how Donald Trump ended up winning the Rust Belt states of Ohio, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. And to me, if you look at the polling data out there today, most of them have absolutely no buyer remorse. They don't always like the tone and tenor that this president takes. They understand how unorthodox he is and not always thrilled with that. But they would argue to you that one of their biggest concerns was taking out ISIS. ISIS today is almost defeated and on the run. Their next one was making a economy that everybody was going to be part of and everybody could move forward. So that's exactly what's happening today. And we see that particularly the biggest beneficiaries of the Trump economy so far have been Hispanics and African-Americans, quite frankly, who are doing better in this economy than any other economy in recent history. And so and the same on immigration, which they supported the president on. And so, you know, we see what he does sometimes in the tones that he takes and the tweets that he makes, and we fall in the trap of saying, oh, that's not my expectation. But there's a large group of Americans who felt that when they see the president do those type of things, it's only evidence that he's going to be a different type of president and is going to do things his way and not become part of the Washington culture. And frankly, that's why he surprised everybody and won in 2016.
And Congressman,
let me throw one in there, John, if I might, just to pile on, because there was another aspect of the 2016 vote that was very important, and those were the folks that wanted to return the courts to their constitutional moorings. And the successful nomination and confirmation of Neil Gorsuch is large for those voters, as are the appellate judges and federal district court judges that the president's getting through at record pace.
Let me read a couple of comments, and then I'll go back to you, Congressman Dent. An email from Daniel. Brabender said that Americans like to have more take-home pay. Most people are smart enough to realize that those modest increases are but doggy treats compared to the rich, the cuts that went to the rich. We are exploding the debt. Republicans hate debt, except when they don't. A tweet from Andy Connor Lamb ran on the following convictions. Keep the ACA, oppose the GOP tax plan, pro-choice besides being personally anti-choice, strengthen background checks for guns. How is any of that Trump? And he did not run as a conservative. To suggest otherwise is absurd spin. An email from Joseph. What does Nancy Pelosi represent that Republicans hate her so much? What are the issues that make her such a negative power for Republican voters? Congressman Dent, can you answer that question?
Well, there's a lot there that you just said. But
Just say the last one on Nancy Pelosi, but go ahead.
Look, the difference in that race out there was that Connor Lamb, you know, tried to distance himself from his national party leadership, specifically Nancy Pelosi. I got the sense, you know, Rick Saccone didn't do that. And Lamb was trying to reach crossover voters, it seemed to me, just based on what I viewed from a distance. And by the way, I thought Saccone, you know, had a very good personal story, personal narrative, but he was clearly very ideologically conservative, didn't have the crossover appeal. And so I guess that's really my message here. And by the way, and I agree with what John Brabender had said, too, that, you know, there have been some successes under the Trump administration on tax reform, regulatory reform. But those messages get drowned out by all the daily chaos, you know, the turnover, the instability, the never ending drama that comes out of the White House. And so we're talking about, you know, Stormy Daniels or whatever the issue, the Tillerson firing this week, whatever the issues are. You know, they distract from those issues, defeating ISIS, like John mentioned. All good. But we really are never able to have that message because there's not enough discipline coming out of the White House in terms of what they're trying to convey. It's the tweet of the day or the tweet of the moment that drives the whole news narrative for the cycle. And those cycles are getting shorter and shorter. I mean, to plan a program like this, my goodness. I can't tell you how many times I'm prepared to go on a TV show to talk about an issue, and it changes in an instant based on a tweet.
Well,
and that's the problem.
Well, you're talking about the president there. And let me just ask you, because this happened earlier this week, he fired the country's top diplomat via a tweet. Charlie Dent, is that the way to do it?
No. I mean, and the same thing with Director Comey. Shouldn't have been fired that way. Don't get me wrong. You're president. You have the right to have on your team who you want.
Absolutely.
But there's a proper way to do things. You know, Tillerson is a good man who was in a bad spot. He was never set up for success. You know, he came into the job and he was given a proposed 30% reduction to his budget. He couldn't hire anybody. You know, the president would undermine his diplomatic initiatives with a tweet, you know, why are you wasting your time in North Korea negotiating? I mean, those kinds of things. So he was really never set up for success. And I thought he was a very good man. I thought he was a real adult and was deliberate. So I think it's a loss that Tillerson's gone.
Let me see what Diana from Haverford has to say. Diana, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, I'm in Pennsylvania District number 7 currently. We are going to be District number 5 soon. We were one of the most gerrymandered districts favoring Republicans in the state of Pennsylvania. We spent, the Democratic local party here spent a lot of time and energy over the last year registering college students. They showed up. They're angry. The millennials, the younger people in this, in around Pennsylvania and around Philadelphia are very upset with this administration. They showed up and they flipped over a dozen local red seats blue, even in a gerrymandered district as much as we are. I would also add that Republicans running for Congress are not able to distance themselves from Trump, but Democrats are able to say, no, I don't want to go with Pelosi. That's okay. We get to do that. We're going to get to be able to do that, but I don't think Republicans could be able to do that. And that's it. Thank you.
Okay, Diana, thanks for calling into Radio Times. We haven't really talked. We have done several shows about the redistricting that is going on in Pennsylvania. But Charlie Giroux, how much do you think that will change the landscape?
Well, if these current maps hold up, it could. I mean, what the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania has done is create a total mess. And I would point out, just for the sake of a historic fact, that your caller who identified herself as a Democratic Party activist in Delaware County has a big bone to pick with her fellow Democrats in Philadelphia, virtually each and every one of whom voted for that quote-unquote gerrymandered plan that was so, you know, heavily tilted to the Republicans. I mean, this was a bipartisan plan. And the fact of the matter is there were a significant number of Republicans that voted against it and a whole lot of Democrats that voted for it. And I'm sure that Congressman Brady would be honest enough to say that he was a strong supporter of that plan.
Well, gerrymandering is one of these very complicated but wonky issues. Congressman Den, if I can go back to you, there are 18 congressional seats in Pennsylvania. You did a quick analysis, 7. Looked like there's safely Republican, 5 safely Democrat, and 6 that are in competition. Is that a good thing to have competitive races in Pennsylvania?
Well, I would argue even before this new map imposed by the state Supreme Court, we already had several, I would say, 5 competitive districts. Mine, the Meehan seat, the Costello seat, the Fitzpatrick seat, the Cartwright seat, were all what I would consider to be competitive seats before. So we had about 5 competitive seats in the old map. We'll have about 6 competitive seats in the new map. Now, the Meehan seat goes in the new map from a competitive seat to a very safe Democratic seat. So, my analysis was 7 safe Republican seats, and I'm including Mike Kelly in that.
Mm-hmm.
Some might not. It's an R+8 presidential index, and 5 safe Democratic seats, and then 6 that we'll be fighting over, and it's a 13-5 map now for Republicans. You know, clearly, if the Democrats have a terrific night in November, this map could go 10-8 their way. I don't think it will necessarily, but it could. I mean, we have to be prepared that this new map could, I'd be curious to hear what my friends Charlie and John think about that.
Yeah, John Braben.
Charlie. Congressman Den, I think one of the things that you've got to look at there, too, are the resignations and retirements that play a very, very large role in the 2018 cycle.
And you're one
correct.
Of them, Congressman Den. John Braben.
They're open seats.
Open seats, exactly. Go ahead, John Brabender.
I would always argue that redistricting, not only here but in every state, is probably the biggest reason for the divisiveness that exists in this country today. For this reason, everybody says, oh, the Republicans redistrict to help Republicans. Look, when you redistrict, and if you're helping a Republican district, the only way you can help a Republican district is by making a Democrat district even more Democrat. And so what happens is we've gone from having these more neutral-related districts to most of the districts represent one side of the party or the other. Over time, it becomes increasingly so. That means representatives become more one side of the party or the other side. That means they don't have to look at every issue, but are just playing to their base. And I think both parties are at fault for this. To just say it's Republican or Democrat is wrong. Redistricting is a incumbent protection plan in most states, and therefore it has made districts much less competitive, much more the extremes of each side of the party, and therefore I believe have contributed a great deal to the divisiveness in Washington, D.C.
Well, we have to leave it there. My thanks to all three of you for joining us. John Brabender, thanks for joining us once again on Radio Times.
Thank you.
Charlie Giroux, thank you for joining us.
Wonderful to be with you.
And Congressman Charlie Den, thank you for joining us on Radio Times.
Hey, great to be with all of you.
Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter, and many other things as well. Adam Stanishevsky, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you for joining us.